The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangled
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We couldn't do it without you. Hey, if you're going to be in New York City the weekend of September 11th, September 9th, 2023, to be precise, why don't you come spend it with us over at Free World NYC? It's a 9/11 event that is being put on and hosted by Billy Ray Valentine, our good friend. Gardner Goldsmith will be there, John Brisson, Tony Arterburn, Wayne McCroyd, Richard Gage, and our guest Don Jeffries as well. You can check it out. The link is in the description. But if it's easier for you, just go to eventbrite.com and search Free World NYC. You'll find it. Saturday, September 9th, New York City. We'd love to have you there if you can make it. Also, thanks to our sponsors. Chemical Free Body has been with us from the beginning. They're making fantastic supplements that actually work. I drink a Green 85 drink every single morning. Tim and the crew over there are making outstanding products in an industry where, you know, half the time it's scammy. Take a look over at Chemical Free Body. You'll get good stuff. The detox bundle helped me a couple summers ago, lean me out in a way that was very alarming. And I'll tell you what, if you're interested, if you think that maybe you need to have a nice cleanse or a flush every now and then, take a look over, go to chemicalfreebody.com and find the detox bundle and see what you think. And if you find something that you like, use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save you a little bit of money. Also, thanks to Legal Shield. They've been in business for half a century in Canada and the United States. It'll give you access to high-powered attorneys in your area for a very reasonable price. How's a dollar a day? It's pretty good. $30 a month will get you access to an attorney that can help you out with all kinds of things. Legal documents, paperwork, IRS audits, traffic tickets, red light tickets, get you prepared for trial if you're in need of that. Identity Shield is offered if you need that. If you run a small business and you're, you know, big enough to have a business but not big enough to have your own legal department, there's a small business plan for that as well. So I tell you what, do this. If you think it's something that might be of interest to you, go to our website, don'tgetpushedaround.com, and read up on it and see what you think. If it's something that you like, pull the trigger. But I'll tell you what, you won't be disappointed, and you certainly will not be getting ripped off thanks to Legal Shield. Well, now that we've got the business out of the way, we can get down to the real nuts and bolts of this. We've got Don Jeffries back, the great Don Jeffries, as we say, to talk about his new book, The Great Plandemic. Oh, my goodness. Without further ado, Don Jeffries. Hey, Don. Good to see you. How are you?
Great to see you, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
Well, we'll be seeing each other in New York City. Hopefully, a lot of people can show up for that. I've never been to New York City for 9/11. That ought to be interesting, no, huh?
Me neither.
Yeah. Well, you've done it. You've done it with this book. And this is the book. I'll tell you, there's a lot of people out there that listen to shows like this and shows like yours, and we have an idea of what's going on. We might not have every last detail figured out, but we have a general idea of what's going on. But there are still a lot of people out there that don't. They don't know anything. They don't know what they don't know. It's not even so much their fault. They've got bad information coming from the media. They've got the pharmaceutical industry scaring them constantly with commercials or sponsored by programs that tell them that they're all going to die. And so they don't have access to really good information. So there's part of me that can't even really blame them. They're working off bad source material. If there's somebody in your life that hasn't figured this out yet, you got to send them Don's book. I mean, you go through the book and it's so organized and laid out properly and everything is covered. Don, I mean, I wish you didn't have to write this book, but can we talk about sort of the inspiration behind this, where this came out? Because your family, you were involved in a personal level by this. Everybody really was, some more so than others. But in your particular case with your brother, this really forced you no choice but to get involved in the researching of this. You know, listen, something that you've been doing, you've been researching these things for a long, long time. So it's right up your alley, but it became personal. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I started writing this book, not long really after, because I was shocked, like we all were, that something like this could happen. I mean, when the entire world was shut down, really, in a couple of days, I mean, the entire world, without a single soldier being needed, without a single cop, without a shot being fired, the world just rolled over and played dead. I mean, unprecedented. It never happened, obviously, in the history of the world. There wasn't a single dissenting nation, a single dissenting leader. And that obviously caught my attention. And, you know, when they were saying all this stuff about this deadly virus, and I saw early on that they were really, you know, cooking the numbers and they weren't reporting it accurately. And I had John Rappaport, who did great work on my show early on, and he was a skeptic right away. Sherry Tenpenny, who wrote the foreword to this, was a skeptic right away. So I wasn't alone, but I obviously knew they were lying, but I didn't know what the end game was. So I started writing the early part of the book and documenting the crazy stuff. And I think that's what differentiates this book from the others that, like my friend Naomi Wolf wrote a fine book, The Bodies of Others. Alex Berenson wrote a series of books, did a good job. Peter McCullough, and of course, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., his book on Fauci is great. But all of them, I think, seem to accept the fact that there was a deadly virus, and then they analyze the reaction to it. So I'm the only one that I know of that started at point A. And that's why I go right back to the beginning. What was going on in China? No, people weren't dropping dead in the street. There wasn't a crazy woman running around spitting on doorknobs, you know, irrationally trying to spread it. They weren't nailing people shut inside their houses. All these stories we've heard. Then in Italy, we know, you know, they weren't. And they told us in both cases, China, they eventually said, well, you know, I have a Chinese source in there that actually we included cases of flu and pneumonia in these COVID cases, which is what we were saying. Same thing in Italy. You know, they sent out the fake photo of the rows of coffins, which researchers soon learned was from 10 years before in another part of the world. So it was a complete lie to try to instill fear in the public. There weren't thousands of people that died there. As they eventually, the Italian media would eventually say, oh, no, 99% of these people died from something else. So, and then when it got to New York, especially in New York, epicenter of the pandemic, when I had people like Jason Goodman and later Citizen Richard, who filmed the empty hospitals, who tried to talk to the EMT personnel who were kind of laughing and smiling and when they mentioned COVID, and saw how empty the things were. And I thought something really weird has gone there. And I talked to people that filmed the so-called refrigerated trucks that were all in the off position. So there weren't any bodies in those trucks. So this, and then of course the dancing nurses who have made a comeback recently. I see the dancing nurses are still out there. So maybe they're going to start their own channel or something, but you know, and they're a part of it. So the rest of the people, maybe they think that's too silly. This is a part of it. This is why I say it's a PSYOP, because you wouldn't have dancing nurses. You wouldn't have empty hospitals if this wasn't a PSYOP. So that's where I was at that point, but I didn't really know what the game plan was. So I kind of eventually put it aside for a while. And then when they developing, people like Chris Graves were doing great research for me when the vaccines first came out, and we realized, okay, this is obviously is a joke. And then eventually you realize, okay, this is the bioweapon. This is important. But then it became personal for me in January 2022. My brother, who was completely healthy, had nothing wrong with him at all, would have lived to be 100. No question about it. But he was a hypochondriac. I mean, a really hypochondriac. And I was kind of, even though I was 8 years younger, I was kind of his keeper in many ways. I was his representative payee for Social Security disability. And I intervened as much as I could for him and advocated for him because he had nobody else. And, but I couldn't do anything about this because he called the hospital in the middle of the night, an ambulance, and he was in the hospital before I knew about it. And I knew they had him. And, you know, and of course he's positive for COVID. I'm sure the first question they asked him was, he vaccinated? He said, no, they fast tracked him. And then, as I've learned from so many other people subsequently, but, he went from completely healthy. I mean, no symptoms at all, except for being a hypochondriac, to dead in 2 weeks. They killed him in exactly 2 weeks. I talked to, doctors early on as much as you could, because of course they quarantine him. That's how they do these things. They don't let the families in. If I had been there, he would have survived. I would have seen what they were doing. And I told them no remdesivir, no ventilators. And they went behind my back and they did both of us. And that's what killed him. Now, this is a hospital protocol because it's very financially lucrative for them. And since he died, you know, and I'll never get over it. Because I still, even though it's nothing I do, I still feel guilt that I wasn't there to try to stop it. And I couldn't. And they had armed guards at the door of the hospital. And this people realized how serious this thing was. I mean, they wanted to make money off these people and they didn't care how many they killed. And that's what they did. They probably made at least $100,000 on my brother, and they killed him in 2 weeks. So a lot of these people took longer. Like, I had Rob Skiba's widow on, and Rob Skiba was from our world too, a podcast host who was killed. But I think it took them a few months to do that. So they made more money on him. And same thing, they quarantine him. The loved ones can't see them. I had other people on as well and heard from lots of people too. That so it's all the same story. I mean, the pattern was clear. They did the exact same thing every time. They ignored, in Rob's case, they ignored his wife trying to tell them about his medical history. They had no interest in that because they were going to do the COVID protocol and kill him. That's what they were going to do because that's what's... profitable for them. So this, once that happened, I said, I've got to revisit this, and I've got to, you know, I can either just remain heartbroken, which I was, or I can try to turn, you know, I can, and it has been cathartic for me to talk about it. So, that's the way I chose to do it. So everybody that reads me and listens to me knows about Ricky, my brother, and, got so many wonderful messages from people afterwards, you know, and it kind of made up for my own family, you know, which I didn't get much there because, you know, they're all vaccinated except for me and the kids. So I sure behind closed doors, they think I'm responsible for it. Wasn't vaccinated and died. So, but that's, you know, the ignorance you deal with, but thank goodness for the rest of the people and all the people that I've heard from. And, it has helped a lot. And, I've dedicated the book to him, obviously, and all the other people. We don't know how many others that had this happen, died needlessly. And as I say, you know, victims of the greatest PSYOP in the history of the world.
Well, it was a psychological operation of epic proportions. They got us from every angle. They did the Yuri Bezmenov demoralization campaign of 6 weeks of terror to break everybody's brains. They hit us with the media fear. They hit us with guilt. You know, how dare you? You don't want to kill your grandmother. They used every tactic they could. And when they ran out of tactics, then they bribed us with lottery tickets and Krispy Kreme and Talladega Laps. And, you know, it was like, the carrot and the stick, you could almost sort of see them working them their way down the page. Like if, you know, A, you know, step A, once you'd finish step A, then move to step B, then move to steps. So they just kind of moved through this process of manipulation. And for those that weren't paying attention, it seemed very normal, and it didn't seem like, I mean, well, everything was abnormal, but it seemed like, you know, they were trying to be logical in their methods, but really it upon further review, it's psychopathic what they were doing. They were trying to scare us. Now, it would have been one thing if there really was a deadly virus that was around the corner that was killing everybody, you know, and bodies were stacked up, I would have a different take on this, but we never saw that. We saw the Chinese videos, like you mentioned. We saw, we were told that the hospitals were filled. I saw the same Jason Goodman clips where he's interviewing EMTs. They're just leaning up against the truck and he's going, "Wait, aren't you guys like busy?" He's like, "We haven't done anything in 3 days." So there was nothing going on. And you're looking around going, okay, this is inconsistent with what I'm being told. But the psychological impact of these lockdowns, boy, the masks component, the social distancing, which came in, it felt like, I mean, did they just borrow this stuff straight out of like Orwell? Like it was like 1984 and Brave New World. It seemed like it was their operating manuals for how they were running these things. You get the same feeling like that this was role played, obviously, Event 201. It felt like it was role played in advance. They sort of had a methodology of what they were going to do and how they were going to do it.
Yeah, and I talk a lot in the book about how Orwellian all of it was, because the idea that, and they even went to the extent of, and I believe it was either Peter C. Kosh or Chris, one of them found out that researchers that during the course of this, once they developed the vaccine, Webster's Dictionary actually went to they changed the definition of vaccine because of it too. I mean, that's how deep this, that's the greatest sci-fi in the history of the world. Everything was involved. Everyone was involved with any kind of power. And, it was beyond Orwellian, newspeak, doublethink, whatever you want to call it, to have a vaccine where the whole purpose behind getting vaccines supposedly historically has been to stop you from getting whatever it is you're getting vaccinated against. Right. And, you could argue about that. I had Andrew Kaufman on my show. I'm like Billy Ray Valentine. I'm on the fence about that. I don't know about the viral theory. I mean, it has some interesting aspects to it. I've always been dubious of why they would inject you with whatever it is they're trying to, you know, stop you from getting. I don't really understand that, but that's what they generally do. But supposedly they worked. I don't know. That's what we were told. And this one literally didn't work, whatever COVID was. And you had to go into the Orwellian world to try to have people. And I had people in my own family, or I'd talk to them. I'd say, well, you know, you just tested positive for this COVID, supposedly, and you've had, you know, three vaccines and five boosters, whatever, however many numbers that's here. And it doesn't rattle their faith at all. Doesn't shake them at all. They still just give you that, like, well, you know, it would have been much worse if I had. Okay. So, you know, just go get another shot. And that's really, I think, the Orwellian aspect to it, is that, you know, war is peace, you know, basically that vaccines don't stop you from getting something, but you still must get it. And that's the thing, even though this, and again, with COVID-19 and the one of the essential points of the book that I show in there is that COVID-19, whatever it is, whatever it's supposed to be, as a strain, they've never isolated. They have no isolates in it. They've never isolated the strain COVID-19, supposedly the most deadly virus in the history of the world, apparently, because it never goes away. It hasn't burned out like every other virus in the history of the world. You know, it just keeps coming back. Heat doesn't matter. And no one questions it, but they can't isolate it. And I have, you know, documentation in the book, the woman in Canada who sued for the Freedom of Information Act to try to find the documentation for, where's the documentation for COVID-19 when you'd developed this PCR test and to use for it. And they wrote back that, no COVID-19 isolates were available. They're never available because they've never been able to, they can't produce them. In other words, prove they exist. So they said they simulated COVID-19 by using remnants of the regular coronavirus. This is what we said it is all along, whatever the common cold, flu, whatever. So it's there. It's all, you know, this is not a conspiracy theory. They're telling you what they're doing. It's just people, they don't care. They just nod and without realizing what it means. You know?
Yeah, it's important to document this. And that's one of the things that you did in the book. It's very well, I mean, there's so much information. That's why I say if there's somebody in your life that is unsure about, if you could just get a crack in the door with the person, you know, just get them to entertain the idea that maybe the government in the media is lying to them, that maybe that there is, I don't know, just the financial component to this, that there's a lot of money at stake and that there's opportunity for people to not be entirely truthful. And if you can crack that door just a little bit and get them to start on Don's book, the rest of, I think, will take care of itself, because there's so much information that's laid out in a way I feel pretty easy to understand, even for somebody that's not really into all of this stuff. You talked a lot about, well, let's talk a little bit about the World Health Organization and the CDC. These are two organizations that really drove the panic. They were in the, you know, if they, you know, the media is driving the getaway car, the World Health Organization is riding shotgun and the CDC is in the back seat, right? So they're all involved in this, and nothing happens without the cooperation of all of them together, right? So they all had to be in on this. That's what makes it appear to be coordinated, because if the CDC was saying one thing and the World Health Organization was saying another thing and the media was saying something different, the messaging would have been all wonky. Now, it already was in some parts. They couldn't get their story straight on everything, but for the most part, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and the media drove this thing. Did you know... What's your take on them setting global virus policy? You know, because the World Health Organization has a long history of being involved in depopulation, covert sterilization programs in Africa and beyond. I mean, this is the wrong organization to be in. I mean, it says World Health, so you would think, you know, like the normies out there would think, oh, this is the perfect organization, except that it's really not. It's a dangerous depopulation outfit disguised as a health organization. And yet they were in charge of this. Were you even the slightest bit surprised? I mean, what did you find out about the WHO that made you uncomfortable?
Yeah, well, certainly. And none of these were. They're all part of the medical industrial complex. And they're not to be trusted. I mean, they're as dishonest as the FBI or CIA, whatever. Every other part of this criminal government that we have in this country and, you know, largely internationally as well. All these people, the WHO, the CDC, they're all involved in these tabletop exercises. And I described that, you know, this was planned well in advance. So you had Dark Winter, which was back in 2001. And all these people, along with Bill Gates, the Gates Foundation, and a usual suspect, especially retired politicians, you know, people that are in Council of Foreign Relations and go to Bilderberg meetings and all that. This is the things they do. It's part of their, you know, it's like the people, I guess, at the Moose Lodge when they plan potluck dinners, you know, it's a much larger scale. Right. But we know, and I documented, but you have, it's no accident either. You want to know how these people operate. The first episode was called, the first exercise was called Dark Winter. It was a simulation of a deadly virus that escaped from China, of course, and how we were going to develop a vaccine to combat it. Bill Gates right in the foreground there. And when Joe Biden, you know, ascended to the presidency, it's no accident that they had him running around babbling during his first winter in office about it was going to be a dark winter, going to be a dark winter. Because, again, it's an inside joke for the few people like us that understand what they're saying. Because the public, 99% of the public just goes over their head, you know, because they don't know about the dark winter tabletop exercise. They had several more like that, and I described them all in the book, all the same theme. Every one of these, WHO, CDC, everybody's in their Gates, all these people are involved, same suspects, and leading up to Agenda 201, which was right before the lo and behold, they actually had a pandemic to deal with. And it was right after Terry Mullis died, the guy who developed the PCR vaccine and who, I have all the quotes about Fauci from him in the book. He did not like Fauci very much. No. And he kind of saw what was coming. And as he said, and this is, he said, look, you know, this test is going to give you whatever result you want. It's worthless to try to, identify a specific vaccine. And this is the guy, he's not a conspiracy theorist. He's the guy that developed the PCR test. No one would be more knowledgeable on the subject than he is, and he said it was worthless. So foundation of this COVID-19 panic, this fear porn, has been that stupid PCR test. That's the test that people have in their homes. And I've known a bunch of them. You're giving themselves that. I knew a friend that had a, had a Christmas celebration a couple of years ago. And they were going and giving COVID tests to everybody on Christmas morning. What's more festive than that?
Yeah.
And one of the little granddaughters, she's positive. So they literally broke up the party, went home on Christmas Day. That's the kind of insanity you're seeing. And it's all based, again, on a test that is worthless, according to the person who developed it. But yeah, that's all part of it. And so we know the WHO was caught lying in 2009 about the swine flu.
Yeah.
That's Cheryl Atkinson, who is, I've had on my show a couple of times. That's how she lost her job at CBS News, because she actually reported on it. And mainstream journalists are not supposed to do any investigative work like that.
Yeah.
It taught her. Now she's, relegated to, starting with the likes of me, so it's really a shame, but that's what happens when you do investigative journalism. But yeah, early on, like I showed, they'll tell you what they're doing. The CDC early on, one of the first things I published on social media was spread it far and wide, the directive to hospitals, I think in March 2020, April 2020 from CDC, which told them instructed all hospitals, you are to list the cause of death as COVID-19, even if the patient hasn't been tested. So it doesn't get any clearer than that.
No.
I mean, so you don't even have to worry about the 90% false positive PCR test. So that's what we were looking at early on. And John Rappaport, when he was on my show early on, he told me, they include what they call presumed cases. And sure enough, I started looking at the weekly CDC reports and that list, and the numbers were, list a little bit about that in the book, where they were going up and down. They were just playing with the numbers because they know nobody reads them.
Yeah.
And it made no sense. They were going up and down like a yo-yo. And but every one of them has a little asterisk that says note, includes presumed cases. In other words, cases where it hasn't been proven that they had whatever. So the whole thing was a farce from the very beginning. And again, what differentiates my book is all this stuff, you're not going to hear anybody else talk about all that.
Yeah.
They're going to start at the point of the vaccine, and that's important. The response to the vaccine, because the vaccine is the bioweapon, but all this stuff that came before, that was building the part, that was part A,
yeah.
And that was necessary to, to set the stage for the vaccine.
And that's what I think makes you uniquely qualified to write this book, because you know about the lead up to this. You understand about who the CDC is and the WHO and what these people do, and what the, anybody that talks to John Rappaport knows how dirty the medical industry is from just a 10-minute conversation with that guy who's been writing about it since the 80s.
Yes.
And in his book, AIDS Incorporated, talking about how the medical industry, and Fauci, by the way, has always been involved in weaponizing data, screwing it around, working with the media to paint a narrative that may or may not be true, usually isn't true. And all of this in order to justify some sort of response, right? A response from the general public, fear, a response from the government, throw money at it, a response from authoritarians, lock everybody down, take away rights, turn them into privileges that can be revoked. The American government spent $5.2 trillion. In response to COVID, according to your book.
Yeah.
To say it's criminal is an understatement. It's criminal. It's multi-generational criminality because of the fact that would you just put this on the credit card? You put the $5 trillion on the Amex, you're going to pay the interest on it forever. This is never going away. Yeah. We got nothing for it. I mean, some people got like $1,600, $1,800. I don't know, whatever. Yeah, nobody really got their money's worth for this. Was this the robbery of the century, Don?
Yeah. Well, there are so many aspects to it. I mean, there's the financial, the economic devastation that this thing caused in terms of shutting down small business and everything. But some people did profit. And I list some of the examples that I know, because you can't. The information is still hidden largely about where this money went. I suspect that the NCAA and the NFL and MLB and they were given huge payoffs, because it's unbelievable that none of them protested. I mean, canceling March Madness, canceling the playoffs. I mean, the NFL's, you know, it was half empty stadiums. I mean, these are the people that won't build their own stadiums. Remember, they demand that the public build them. So they're absolutely parsimonious, to say the least. They're like John D. Rockefeller holding on to those dimes. They don't spend money. So for them to give up this kind of, they had to have been given some kind of underhanded deal. We don't know. I did find that some MLS soccer teams were given money. So, you know, if they were given money, you know, damn sure that the NCAA and the NFL and everything were given even more. And we know Tom Brady's company, somehow he got a new yacht out of it. And people like Kanye West and other people, just celebrities that seem to nonsensically have gotten payoff for some reason. That's the way the system worked. But Ron Paul called it early on the greatest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the elite in the history of the world. And who am I to argue with Ron Paul? So I think that's probably a good bet that happened. But we really can't even analyze it yet, because we don't know. All we know is some of the stuff. We know if Tom Brady and some other people got something, that probably lots more famous and celebrated people did, and lots even Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood destroyed itself. Hollywood, the condition Hollywood's in today, where it's on life support, is not only the woke stuff, which is terrible, but the fact that they allowed themselves to be shut down as well. And, basically, people don't realize what this did. I mean, that's why I said, you know, early on, I remember talking to Billy Ray and Tony, I think, on America Unplugged, where I was saying, you know, I think they've finally gone too far. I think they've overreached here. When they shut everything down, I said, I think sports fans are not going to put up with it. I think women, you know, with the malls and Hollywood, the movies and everything. I said, I just think that they've gone too far, but they didn't. They showed that Americans had no tipping point at all. I mean, they canceled all the things that they most loved in the world, and the vast majority of people clutched their masks, wore their masks, even though every single box of those stupid, disposable masks you get says it does not stop any virus or something. It's like a cigarette warning. Right. It doesn't matter. And the biggest joke of all is they were making such a big deal about how easily this could spread, and wash your hands constantly as soon as you walk in the door. But once you took the stupid mask off, you could throw it anywhere. There wasn't a special hazmat container or something for it. They didn't. Nobody even talked about that. So again, they did so many things like that that revealed their lie. And that was one of the biggest. They're so concerned about this, but just throw your mask anywhere. You know, it's okay.
Throw it in the ocean. Who cares?
Exactly.
Yeah, this was it. If you did even just the cursory amount of digging, you would find inconsistencies that were so obvious and so glaring that you really had a hard time overlooking them. But look, I mean, you get into some of the darker components of this as well. You talk about the death of Brandy Vaughn. You talk about the death of Barry and Honey Sherman, the murders of that. You talk about some of, you know, I think that this is important for people that, that sort of don't know too much about the pharmaceutical industry. They maybe say, well, listen, they make medicines. Sometimes medicine works and sometimes it doesn't really work for everybody. So there are side effects, and that's just kind of the way it is. And yeah, you know, you listen to the fast talking guy on television reading off all the side effects of the medicine that's supposed to stop you from, being depressed. But one of the side effects is suicidal thoughts. And you're just like, what are we doing here? So like, if you understand the pharmaceutical industry, you know that they're run by criminals. They're all convicted felons. Every single one of them has been convicted in court of felonies. They've paid out the biggest fines in the history of the planet. There's no greater industry. They're the number three leading cause of death inside America, the American medical industry. So this is not an industry that is held to outstandingly high standards. But and I think maybe some people can come to that conclusion eventually. But there's another side to this, a much darker side. And I think that people that don't know about this maybe would be dismissive of it. But listen, when you're talking about $1 trillion a year in the pharmaceutical industries, there's a lot of people that wind up dead that get on the wrong side of people in big pharma. It's something that gets scoffed at, and people go, oh, get out of here with your tinfoil hat. And you go, yeah. let me show you what happens when you get on the wrong side of them. Exhibit A, Brandy Vaughn with the bullet next, you know, set at her doorstep, and, or, you know, in the Shermans and everything. Can we talk a little bit about this, about what happens when you get on the wrong side of the pharmaceutical industry and what they have at their disposal?
Well, it's kind of like any of the unnatural deaths that I talk about in Hidden History and elsewhere. I mean, these things are a way of life. It's the way that these conspirators, and they're conspirators because they conspire against the interests of the public all the time. They don't know any other way of doing business. And part of doing business is to get rid of whistleblowers. If you can't throw them in prison or demean it messy, there's a certain amount that they kill. But, you know, the same people that will accept the fact that, you know, that close family members, you know, siblings or whatever will kill each other over a life insurance policy, whatever. Everybody say, oh, yeah, got a bonus. You know, well, you know, if you're talking about something like the pharmaceutical industry or the oil companies or something where you've got, you know, unfathomable profits, and you're thinking that they somehow they wouldn't have a motive to silence someone. So, but that, and that's all, that's crazy. That's a conspiracy. Wasn't it a conspiracy theory that somebody who, you know, grew up in the same house, that they ended up, one of them killed another one just so they could get, you know, $100,000 insurance policy, not millions. I mean, that's what we're told, you know, that there were, you know, how many times do we see where mothers, you know, will, or let alone fathers, but you know, but instead of getting divorced, they'll just kill. Yeah. They're expelled. It happens all the time. I mean, that to me, that's unfathomable. Is that a conspiracy theory? I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like much of a motive to me when half the end marriages end in divorce anyhow. Yeah. Why would you just divorce? Why do you have to murder somebody? But we'll do it. So these people, I mean, there's no question. They have you mentioned Brandy Vaughn, and look at all the African leaders. The only ones who spoke out against the vaccine, everyone that did, they all died unnaturally. Yeah. So, you know, maybe it's just an amazing coincidence, but I think we certainly should be more skeptical. And you mentioned the medical industrial complex being the third leading cause of death in America. That was before pandemic. I submit to you that because we don't know how many deaths can be attributed to their deadly vaccine, and we don't know how many deaths can be attributed to the hospital protocol that killed my brother, and who knows how many other people. I think if you add all those deaths in, they're unquestionably number one. Think our medical system is the leading cause of death in America. I feel pretty confident.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'll tell you what, if the official American medical system doesn't get you, the unofficial one will, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, right? These are the sort of hybrids that the NGOs that aren't technically counted as part of the medical industry from an official standpoint, but they're just off to the side. They're the NGOs that Kissinger talked about in 1974 that could be used for the depopulation component, right? They could be used as the buffer between governments and the people. They could say, well, listen, we'll give you plausible deniability, all you know, leaders of the Philippines or a leader of Kenya. Yeah, we want to institute this sterilization program in your country, but, you know, look bad on you. So why don't we say we didn't come up with it, you didn't come up with it, but this other institution, this NGO did. So the role of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been known by people like us for quite a while. They've had big problems with their vaccine programs, whether it's causing polio with the polio vaccine or whether it's sterilizing women with the antigens that are secretly hidden in the tetanus vaccines that the World Health Organization and the Gates Foundation distributed. We understand who these people are. What was the role of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation from what you researched in this whole COVID narrative? We saw it first kind of spring up a little bit with Event 201, but we know it wasn't just limited to that. They had an oversized role in this whole COVID narrative, did they not?
Well, you find them everywhere. I mean, they seem to be involved in every single one of these things. And Bill Gates obviously is a very strange guy. I mean, he's probably the leading eugenicist. And again, I think that's ultimately, you want to look for the main motive, just like in the JFK assassination, you could say the primary motive was probably Vietnam. This you can say the primary motive, I think, was a eugenicist goal of reducing the population. Bill Gates is probably the leading eugenicist in the world because of his Asperger's or whatever he is on the spectrum. He can't contain himself, so he's constantly smiling inappropriately when talking about millions of people dying, and it's his number one fantasy. I mean, you know, he talks about it all the time. So this is, and it's a strange thing because this is a guy who was basically an unfairly crowned king of software when he stole everything, as most of these guys do, but still, he's a computer guy. What? How did he suddenly become the king of vaccines that I pointed out many times, and they were saying to people like us, or who are you? Are you a doctor or anything? It's Bill Gates. Bill Gates is the face of this thing. He developed the world's crappiest software system. He knows a lot about viruses because his Windows was basically a giant virus for many years. That's what it was. And so he knows about those viruses, but he's no medical expert at all. So why is he? But his foundation has always curiously been involved. The same foundation, they wouldn't, you know, this is the same guy who, when my kids were little, and I always wondered, you know, why are all the schools, they all have Apple computers? Because this guy was too cheap. He would not outfit but he was spending money on other things, on, you know, vaccinating everybody in the world, especially Africa. This was his main quest in life. But he didn't take what his product is. Hey, you know, provide this Cracker Jack and, you know, Windows computers for all, the teach them all how to just keep booting, you know, when you have an issue with it because it's a giant virus. But he never provided computers to anyone, which he could have easily done. And he could have gotten a good public relations coup out of it and a tax write-off. They don't care about that. They have other motives. So he never really, if you look at his social activism as a world, it's always been centered around this. Always been centered around vaccinating the world and preparing for pandemics and things. And I go in the book, all these people, including Gates, all these people that talked about, we have to prepare for the next pandemic. Now, the only pandemic we've ever had in our history, really, that we know of, was the 1918 Spanish flu. And I wrote in there, it's even questionable what that was, because it could have been a medical experiment gone wrong at an army base. There's evidence for that. But yes. So even if you assume that was a real pandemic, it had been over 100 years. Why the sudden obsession with, you know, we need to be ready for the, and Gates, I have the quotes, he constantly was talking about, we need to be ready. Next pandemic is going to be worse. This made no sense. And of course, nobody questions him. What are you talking about? The swine flu, it's a big nothing burger. Ebola, which has a much higher rate of a kill rate, supposedly. Nothing. And you, same people that told us we had to do it, the same government official, I think it's a guy in Texas or whatever, that said, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. You know, it's just, you can walk around, even though it's much more deadly than whatever COVID is. But the same guy, of course, you have to lock down society for COVID. So again, that's the inconsistencies there. But yeah, Gates is at the center of it. And the first thing people ought to do, again, it would be like an athlete, like LeBron James is at the center of this. I mean, he's as knowledgeable about this as Gates is, you know, theoretically. So, but people don't question it. They just nod their head. Yeah, Gates is he's not an expert. He's no more expert than you or I are. But yeah, we would be laughed out of it. Oh, you're just a tinfoil hat guy. Gates is a eugenicist who wants millions of you to die. I don't know if that's a conspiracy theory or not. And lo and behold, that appears to be what's happening. So you want to look for a motive behind it? I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, and again, his brothers in the tech industry played a role in this as well. There was a huge role for big tech to play in censoring. They played multiple roles. First, censoring anything contradictory to the official narrative. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, masks don't work, don't get the shot. Anything that was questioning that was instantly silenced and demonetized and banned and whatever. So we had all of that. Then there was the simultaneous promotion, the elevation of certain voices and the suppression of other voices. You talked in there about Alex Berenson. Alex Berenson went head to head with Twitter. He found that the Biden administration had ordered Twitter to silence him. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's better. And Tucker Carlson, who, again, everybody makes fun of me for it, but he was the only place when his television show was on, especially early on, he had people, his families that were damaged by the vaccine. Nobody else was doing that. He had people on, the little girl that was 12 years old and her mother unwisely went and got her vaccinated for no reason, and she's in a wheelchair now. I mean, there's tragic stories like that all over the place. And he was the only one giving it for it. He had Alex Berenson on there regularly. Again, I think it's important. I'm not going to condemn any of these people because, again, what they're saying is important. And from point D or whatever on, from once the vaccine was introduced, I'm pretty much on board with these people. The only thing I don't do, I don't buy the lab leak theory. I think that's the Republican counterpart. Mm-hmm. And I think it's misdirection, like the mafia killed JFK. It's, you know, there's nothing, there was no deadly virus. So whatever leaked out of there wasn't that. And the Frankenstein research going on in Wuhan lab is horrible. We should, mm-hmm. No rational country should be doing gain-of-function research, which is defined as trying to make viruses more powerful. What rational person would want to make viruses more powerful? That's what the research is. So it's insane, and it's Frankenstein. So obviously, it should have been stopped a long time ago. So Rand Paul, when he's talking about it, he's right about that. But what's happening is that these people are concentrating on it, and they're blaming China, China, China. See, they let it go. This is deadly Chinese virus. And no, because first of all, I have to determine what is COVID-19. Tell me where that came. You can't prove it exists. So that's where I'm different than it. But I'm right on board with them. And I think so. I don't concentrate that much on that. I think we need to have the whole story. But I certainly can get on board with them that we need to look at the vaccine and why was it developed. But again, I think that it's really just unwise and false thinking to attribute it to these nefarious. I mean, I'm no fan of China. Chinese are horrible, right. You know, the government. But I don't think you can say that they were responsible for this. Again, you had people like Bill Gates, WHO, the CDC, who were planning for this, going back to 2001, talking about it, rehearsing it. And so I don't know to what degree China was involved in that. They're certainly part of it, and it's a World Health Organization after all. So they're certainly just like the United Nations. But so I think we need to look beyond that. And I wish people would not be, but that's the typical thing. The Republicans and conservatives, when they start, they're focusing so much on that. See, they tried to cover up, they didn't admit about the lab leak theory. Okay, congratulations. You've got them to admit there was a lab leak. Okay, still show me some COVID-19 isolates and explain those damn dancing nurses that are getting bigger than ever, because that's part of the psyop.
Yeah. Well, you start with no virus, no disease from Andrew Kaufman. You know, like that's like you start the book like right off the bat. This is where we're going with this. But even if there were a virus, the idea that it just magically leaked out of China, and it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, you don't think that it was intentional? There's so much advanced knowledge. And again, much like 9/11, you want to say, it was an inside job, and everyone just said, well, we're going to, you know, the Bush administration was involved in it. Well, yeah, but it wasn't just them. It was this group and the Israelis and the Saudis and the Pakistan, you know, and there's all these other components to it. So it's very simplified when you go, well, it's just a lab leak and it was all China's fault. You go, well, if it was all China's fault, then explain why event 201 6 months earlier described in excruciating detail what we were going to experience. And then we wound up experiencing it. Almost identical to this. So, and again, the CDC was there at event 201, and wasn't the Chinese version of the CDC there as well? So like sure. There was advanced coordination on this. This wasn't some accident. This is a legitimate conspiracy.
And you can really look at the reaction, the response of the world to this shutdown, wanted this lockdown. The entire world is very much like the response you see in our rigged marketplace that I wrote about in my book, Survival of the Rich, is how there is no competition and it never, and it really never has been in crony capitalism. It's not free enterprise. And I showed over and over again how this works. If you did, you would have companies actually trying to do different things and offer better. You would have some companies saying, you know what, these automated menus, everybody hates them. I'm going to hire a receptionist to have a human being. They would get more business because they did that. You would have them cutting prices. You know, of course, you can only go so far, but they all know what the price is, and this is what milk costs. We're going in a competitive environment. You would have real competition. It's, you know, the father of capitalism, John D. Rockefeller. His credo was competition is a sin.
Yeah.
So that's and this is the way you can look at this thing. If you had nations around the world competing philosophies, which appears to be the case, right? Then they would have had different responses to something unprecedented like this. We need to lock down society. You need to put these stupid masks on and you need to stay 6 feet apart. So it's as far as I can see, nobody, Vladimir Putin, the great rebel, I don't think he really balked at this. And even the African leaders that they knocked off later were just, they were balking at the vaccine mandates. That's the only opposition you got.
Yeah.
Brazil, Bolsonaro, people like that. I mean, early on, you had Belarus, and I described it in there, that kind of still played soccer and stuff. But no one really said, this is ridiculous. This is BS. Show us what this thing is. This makes no sense. We're not gonna kill our industry by doing this. We're destroying it. But every country did that. Every single one. If you had competition in the world stage, they wouldn't do this. We were really enemies.
Yeah.
You know, at least one country would try to say, hey, you know, it's a stupid idea. We're going to show you we can do it. But no, I mean, some countries were better. Sweden, places like that, they didn't lock down quite as much. But everybody accepted the basic premise. And everybody altered the society and caused untold social, you know, so we still don't know economically, socially, just the fractured families that I see in my own family and so many others. And the loved ones that died in nursing homes, unvisited, unloved, you know, all these horrible stories, they all let it happen. No one questioned it. No one in the world, no one in our, certainly in America, until the vaccine came along, then Tucker Carlson, a lot of people questioned that. But nobody questioned early on. Nobody was saying, why are these dances, why are these nurses dancing? Why are these hospitals empty? And the media's, that's when they should have jumped on it, because then they may have been able to stop the vaccine. Because they would have been saying, well, okay, what do we need this vaccine for? Empty hospitals and dancing nurses? So that's why I think that's an important part of it. But I realize I'm the only really person talking about it.
Well, I remember when the Mercy boats came off the coast of New York, or off the coast of Los Angeles, and they were supposed to be there for catastrophes, right? And then they set up a field hospital in Seattle, and then they just put it all back together and it just disappeared and it went away. And everyone went, that's weird. What's that all about? And of course, like you mentioned, the dancing nurses are making a comeback now with climate change, which is perfect, completely on brand. Because when you have something fake that you need to sell to, let's be honest, a dumbed down population, there's a way to do it. And they, you know, you could dazzle them with facts, or you can baffle them with bullshit and dances. And that's what we've got. We've got a generation of people that believe COVID is real because they saw nurses doing a choreographed dance routine and didn't bother to ask the question, if we're in the middle of the most dangerous pandemic in the history of humanity, why do all these nurses have all this free time? The answer is, they're not doing anything because there is no pandemic. You would know this if you had it felt, I'll tell you what, Don, honestly, it felt like a litmus test to see how far can we push people? How stupid is the general public? Where is the line? Will they push back? I mean, can we bulldoze sand into the skate parks and put 2x4s over basketball hoops? How far can we go before the public stands up and says we've had enough? And apparently there's still more room for them to go. And we see, so as we transition out of COVID, which we'll never forget, right, we start to see some common denominators for the new narratives, the new scams that are posting, which is climate change. Do you feel like we're going to see, or we're already starting to see this pivot? Like COVID has kind of served its purpose. It's, you know, we've mapped out the current psyche of the American general public. We know, you know, listen, Netflix is as good of a piece of bait to get people into the mousetrap as anything else. Like, do you feel like we're going to see a new version, you know, of say climate change, but using all these tricks and tactics that they learned from COVID?
I think that they learned a lot from this, and they learned how stupid we are. You said it was a litmus test, and they realized, okay, we pretty much can tell them anything and they'll do it. But the nurses dancing for climate change, again, gives the lie to the whatever myth they tried to explain about why they were dancing in the midst of a pandemic. And, you know, some of these videos, they have real patients that look like, or mannequins, I don't know which would be worse, in the background. I mean, so they're actually dancing. I mean, I worked in a hospital for a long, and I'm telling you, this would never happen under any circumstances. No hospital would ever allow that. Because first of all, who's watching the patients? It's inappropriate. It's loud and noisy. People are sick in there. It makes no sense. They're obviously well choreographed. They looked like, they didn't look like nurses. They looked like, you know, rockettes or something. It's absolutely absurd. In fact, they're still selling it. And now why would nurses be dancing for climate change? Are they treating climate change patients? I mean, none of it makes any sense, but they're just going to come up with whatever new stupid cause celeb. But then maybe they'll dance for transgenderism next. I mean, that's because that's what they're doing. They're just, they're saying, okay, we're just dancing for our agenda. And, again, it's an important part. Nobody else is looking at that, but hopefully the dancing nurse is coming back. I think more people will focus on it, but it's completely ridiculous. I don't know how anybody can take it seriously.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up with this because there's something that is going to get you whether there's a place where COVID, climate change, transgenderism, all that stuff comes into an apex, and that is the university system. We have watched as the university system is used as a place where you can prevent people from coming in with vaccination rollout policy. I've seen crazy authoritarianism from these universities talking about this. Then there is a silencing of any sort of speaking out against anything that's the established norm. Especially if you're a professor, God forbid. Most of them are already indoctrinated, but if there's the rare one that comes and speaks out against it, banished immediately. There's the critical race theory that's being taught throughout the schools and being normalized inside universities. You've got safe spaces. You've got them preventing people from speakers from coming to the university and speaking. You've got anybody that has any sort of divergent thought is not welcome at the university system. What is this going to do to us for the next COVID, for the next pandemic, for the next climate change? Because the barriers, the barriers that prevent something, the skill sets that prevent another COVID from happening, critical thought, asking questions, these are being bred out of students that go into this university system. It makes me fear, Don, that the next time around, it's going to be so much easier because the people that normally would be anti-establishment, young kids, say fuck the system, all that stuff is being bred out and normalized. And now, if you don't take it, if you're not completely in line, in lockstep even, with the ideas being taught at the university system, you're banished, right? This is a bad precedent we're setting.
Oh yeah, and it's all about precedence. And you know, I write hidden history. You go back to Abraham Lincoln or Franklin Roosevelt or whatever. These precedents are established, and they're there. As Ron Paul also said, I keep quoting him, but he deserves to be quoted. You know, once the government assumes a new power, they never give it back. So during this pandemic, they assumed lots of new powers, and you know, the first and foremost being in a supposedly free market economy, they were able to shut the market economy down, and they were able to shut it down in their typical inconsistent and double standard way, that you know, having shutting down all small businesses and not letting them sell the same products that Walmart and Home Depot and Target could still sell. And again, nobody who questioned that. Oh, I didn't see many concern. Where was the business roundtable? Where's the Chamber of Commerce? Where are the conservatives who are the great defenders of capitalism? They were absolutely silent, much as you see the churches were silent. Churches were silent when they said, no, you can't go to church, but you will leave the liquor stores open. I mean, you talk about, you know, crazy contrast that nobody, where were the big pastors? Why were they marching in the streets with that, you know, liquor stores open, churches closed, and big signs? Nothing like that. That was the most disillusioning thing for me, is that to realize how, I knew we were outnumbered, but I didn't know we were outnumbered quite this much. And to see that we didn't have a single leader, and the churches really let us down, because they should be supposedly outside the government business, but they weren't. And that's why they get away with all this stuff, because none of it made any sense. I mean, how many times did I point out in the book, how many times did you see the Nancy Pelosi's, the Laurie Lightfoot's, the Gavin Newsom's caught constantly with their pants down, with their mask, you know, not on, over and over again. So as I said, you know, this is the biggest, from the very beginning, the first clue you knew that this was a joke on the southern border was never. This was politicized from the beginning. If this had been a real pandemic, especially with President Donald Trump, which are anti-immigration, right? perfect excuse. Nobody could even question it. Trump, there's your excuse. You're scared to do it. As a deadly pandemic, I have to close the border. I have to seal the border. No, there's nobody that could have argued it. He didn't even try. Nobody tried. It stayed open. And then later during the Biden administration, you had a totally ludicrous notion where you had one of those guys asked at a press conference, why is it true that, you know, you're mandating vaccines for most workers, but you're not mandating them for people that are coming into the country illegals? And the press secretary said, yeah, that's true. So again, how are we supposed to take this seriously and you seriously if you're letting politics get in? The same thing with, I talked about that, the BLM riots are okay. They're not super spreaders, but Trump rallies are. This was politicized over. There was inconsistency everywhere. That's not where you'd act in a real plan. Science would rule the day with consistency, and you'd realize, okay, we have to do this to protect the public. Close the border. We can't have any rallies, whatever. Close all business, whatever. They didn't do that. They selected and kept their favorites open, and it was all politicized. And again, I don't know how anybody can look at all that and not realize that it was a psyop.
Well, for those of us out there that did look at this and did recognize it as a psyop and saw these signs, I'll tell you what. Don has organized the book in a way that takes all the things that you probably remembered and a bunch of the things that you already forgot over the last 3 years, yeah, puts them in a book in a way where it's on the record now. It's easy for you to if you figure this out, but somebody in your family is having a little bit of trouble with it, I think Don's book might crack them open a little bit, at least get them to see things from a different point of view. Don, what's the best place for people to follow your work with iProtest, with America Unplugged, and to buy the book and to follow everything else that you're doing?
Well, the book is Masking the Truth, How COVID-19 Destroyed Civil Liberties and Shut Down the World. It has a foreword by Dr. Jerry Tenpenny. Very honored for that. You can find it anywhere. I put the link out from Lulu. We're doing this differently. It's not quite self-published, but it's close because I should make more money that way. So people buy it through the website and they can look on my Substack and my Twitter. And early on, I left those links. So you could get it that way. But Amazon is fine. I need numbers there. I need reviews there. And they're doing things to this book they've never done in any of my other books. And you know what my other books are. They're all controversial. They've never screwed with them like this. The libraries, it's almost impossible to get it in libraries. Amazon has, you know, people told me they wrote reviews. They just never showed up. It's Google Books. You can't find it in a search. It's there, but you have to go back door to find it. They're doing things that they've never done before. Substack is where I'm getting through to people. It's the only place my presence is growing, although there's indications they're manipulating things there too. But now it's DonaldJeffries.substack.com. It's called I Protest as well there, just like my show, every Friday on Rockfin on my YouTube channel. So I ask people to go to Substack and support me, subscribe to me there. I keep people updated on things because I've shadow banned everywhere else. Facebook and Twitter is largely useless to me because they just block what I have. They keep unfollowing people for me on Twitter and people tell me. And so Substack is the place to be. And I don't care where you buy the book. It's the best deal. It really, you know, not like we're not making that much money off these books anyhow. So yeah. I'm just grateful if you do it. And please suggest it to your library. It has gotten in a few libraries now, I've heard from people because they were persistent. Just keep suggesting it to your library. I get a sale that way. It won't cost you anything. Do that. And if you can write a review or just a rating on Amazon, that helps because we have to try to break through this. InfoWars, I think, is going to buy copies to sell in their bookstore. We'll see. I'm not sure if they've done it yet, but they had an interest. So we're trying to, and they should be interested. So we're going to try to get it out to alternative media like that because this is, it's the greatest psyop in the history of the world.
It really is. Support Don's work. He's doing outstanding. He's writing great books that need to be written, talking about the things that will get you rightly banned. That's Don Jeffries, everybody. If you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to follow me on Twitter at macroaggression or the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll be right back.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save
big time
for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.